Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty. That is the way he lived. That is what he leaves us. My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it.
Senator Edward Kennedy eulogizing his brother, Robert Kennedy, boy, to my ear, sounding eerily like RFK there after RFK was assassinated in 1968. Here's Ted Kennedy again. After being diagnosed with his own death sentence last year, brain cancer, of course, to which he succumbed early this morning, he nonetheless made it to the Democratic Convention in Denver.
As I look ahead, I am strengthened by family and friendship. So many of you have been with me in the happiest days and the hardest days. Together we have known success and seen setbacks, victory and defeat. But we have never lost our belief that we are all called to a better country and a newer world. And I pledge to you that I will be there next January on the floor of the United States Senate when we begin the great fight.
Ted Kennedy at last year's Democratic Convention. We'll speak to two biographers of Edward Kennedy this morning, later with Adam Clymer, right now with Don Acoin, Boston Globe staff writer and co-author of Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. Don, thanks for coming on today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And listeners, you can call with your eulogies for Ted Kennedy, as I said before the break, including his greatest achievements, in your opinion, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Don, first on the events of the last day, how did death come to Senator Kennedy? How much do you know?
Well, there was an interview on a Boston TV station with a priest who was in the room. And according to the priest's account, his family was there, children, his wife Vicky, of course, grandchildren. I'm not sure how many of the nieces and nephews to whom he served as a surrogate father for so long. But it was a full room, all of them praying, apparently, and telling the senator how much they loved him. And he indicated that he was ready to die. He apparently was able to extend that comfort to his family members at the end. So according to the priest, it was a pretty stirring scene.
And listeners, in addition to your calls, you can also post your last thoughts regarding Senator Kennedy on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Don Acoin, health care reform was, of course, the cause of his life. And I want to talk about the present. We'll talk about the past a little bit with you, more with Adam Clymer later. But I really want to talk about what was going on just in these last few weeks. How much was he involved this summer when the actual debate and negotiations are, in fact, going on right now?
I'm not down in Washington, Brian, so I can't give a conclusive answer to that. My sense is that he was involved in the early months of this year, but the last couple of months, the nature of his illness was such that he was not able to be involved. I mean, I think his staff, which was always sort of renowned for their prowess, was able to keep his fingerprints on. But there's been a lot of talk about how the health care bill has gotten mired down in some partisan gridlock to which Kennedy might perhaps have been able to supply an antidote. I mean, he was not a magician, but he did have this unique ability to reach across the aisle and find common ground, and that seems to be lacking at the moment. I mean, I think there was some expectation, at least in Democratic quarters, that this could be a final gift to Ted Kennedy, the passage of universal health care, which has been, as he said last August in Denver, the cause of his life. It's just a coincidence, by the way, but he died a year to the day last night, a year to the day from that speech in Denver.
Wow. How about that? And a moving comment from Moshe on our Facebook page, who wrote, having had two friends die of brain cancer, I was never optimistic about his prognosis, but I had hoped he would live long enough to vote for the health care reform that he cared so much about. I hope his colleagues will bear in mind what he would have wanted them to do. And, Don, what would he have wanted them to do? Was the public insurance option important to him? It seemed to have been bargained away in the Senate in favor of some kind of private co-op still being defined. Was the public option an issue important to Ted Kennedy? Do we know that?
I do not know that specifically, but I suspect that it would have been, that it was very important as a key component. I mean, his goal was always universal coverage, and anything that falls short of that, I think he would have viewed with a somewhat suspicious eye. I mean, his commitment to health care derives, as is so often the case with Kennedy, from personal experience. I mean, he had that plane accident in 64 where he broke his back, and he was in the hospital for months. And he was talking to his then-campaign manager, Jerry Daugherty. This is 1964, about 6 months after JFK had been murdered. And Jerry Daugherty came from a blue-collar background. I think his dad might have been in the postal service. And Kennedy said to him one day, Jerry, how does your family do it? How do you handle the medical bills? What do you do if someone gets sick in your family? And he looked around him in the hospital ward, and he saw the financial strain that it put on average people. And for a child of privilege who'd not ever been exposed to financial privation of any kind, it was a real eye-opener. And for the next, 45 years, that became his mission, to make sure that, he was the one who introduced or at least popularized the phrase, healthcare is a right, not a privilege. That was a somewhat radical notion when he first began to voice it 25, 30 years ago, and now it seems to have gained more currency.
And when you talk about his ability, almost unique ability, to cross the aisle and get things done, Senator McCain said recently that the health care legislation might be going better right now if Kennedy was able to be more involved. Do you think he meant it, Senator McCain, or was he just posturing in order to oppose?
No, I think McCain meant it. I mean, McCain usually means what he says. We actually drew the title of our book, Last Lion, from something John McCain said last May when Ted Kennedy was diagnosed. He said, I've described Ted Kennedy as the last lion of the Senate. He remains the single most effective member of the Senate if you want to get results. We took our title from that, and that quote I just read to you is the epigraph to our book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think John McCain, I saw some video when Ted Kennedy gave the of Caroline Kennedy, and Ted Kennedy gave the Profile in Courage Award to John McCain 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, I think Kennedy, though he could be certainly fiercely partisan, I think he appreciated anyone who shared his zest for the craft of politics. I mean, that's one of the things I think we've lost, is in an increasingly technocratic, consultant-driven, poll-driven approach to politics, he was a happy warrior. I think that's what people responded to, particularly when his national political profile was rekindled, first in 2000, campaigning for Al Gore, then even more so in 2004 with John Kerry, where he sort of helped push Kerry to victory in the Iowa caucus, and then, of course, famously in 2008, where he delivered that endorsement to Barack Obama.
An early endorsement, not just the convention speech, which, of course, was much later, but that early endorsement of Obama rather than of Hillary Clinton, which helped give Obama legitimacy very early on in the campaign, correct?
Exactly, Brian. I mean, Obama, as you may recall, in the primaries was struggling with blue-collar voters, to a certain extent with Latino voters, to a certain extent with elderly voters. All three of those constituencies were drifting much more strongly in Hillary Clinton's direction. All three of those constituencies form part of the base of Ted Kennedy's political support.
And remind me, was that after Iowa, after New Hampshire?
It was just before Super Tuesday, though.
Uh-huh.
So it helped, and it helped legitimize, apart from sending a message to those constituencies that Obama's someone they should think about supporting, it also legitimized Obama's still at that time somewhat insurgent, or at least maybe implausible in the eyes of some in the Democratic establishment. The imprimatur of Ted Kennedy went a long way towards sending a message that he could and should be the nominee. It did, as you know, infuriate many of Hillary Clinton's reporters, I think now in New York, released a scorching statement describing it as a betrayal and really blasting Kennedy for that decision.
Donna Coyne, Boston Globe staff writer, co-author of Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. We're collecting your comments in our Facebook group at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and on the phone at 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. And of course, for all the praise that Senator Kennedy is getting today, the day of his death, Don, he had many political enemies as well. And looking at the top of our comments page at WNYC.org, those people are showing up too, and they have every right. And Jim from Brooklyn writes, his passing is sad, but he was the least capable of the Kennedy brothers. The Chappaquiddick incident and his seeming lack of contrition will be his legacy. Another writer from Brooklyn says, will even one Republican show the decency to honor Kennedy by putting aside vile partisan scheming and voting for what is right, health care for everyone? But then someone else from Queens writes, Ted Kennedy is the embodiment of the need for term limits. 47 years in the Senate is about 35 years too many. Massachusetts citizens have been duped into believing that the Kennedys have their best interests in heart, when really it is the Kennedys' interests that the Kennedy clan has at heart. Ben Michael from Queens, this guy was a cheat, drunk, and killer. He should have been removed from office years ago. So, Don, Ted Kennedy certainly had his detractors.
Oh, you can say that again. I mean, in a way, he foreshadowed the partisan antipathies that would fill the air with during the Clinton presidency, both Bill and Hillary Clinton, and then with George W. Bush. Ted Kennedy was a target of a lot of conservative fundraising groups, you know, with the letters. They simply had to mention his name for 20-plus years before the Clintons stepped into that role and the dollars would flow in. He was a polarizing figure, no question. I mean, at the country at large, within the Senate, I mean, it's this paradox. There's so many he's a walking bundle of contradictions. Within the Senate, he was a unifying force. For all of the fiery rhetoric, he was extremely popular among the other 99 senators. Nationally, especially outside Massachusetts and the liberal Northeast, something else. I will say, though, that, and part of the reason we wrote the book was the sense that at the end of, as the partisan passions cool, after half a century of a very consequential career, a reappraisal is due. And I guess I would differ with one of the emailers who said he was much less illustrious than his brothers. I mean, obviously, he didn't attain to the presidency, and that puts you in a unique category if you become president. But he did write 2,500 major bills, and 300 of those became law. I mean, in areas like health care and education and civil rights and immigration, he was a dominant figure in the Congress for half a century. I mean, his first speech was, or his biggest speech, was the Civil Rights Act in 1964, and he framed it as his slain brother's wish. He said, of Jack, he said, his heart and soul are in this bill. If his life and death had a meaning, it was that we should not hate but love one another. We should use our powers not to create conditions of oppression that lead to violence, but conditions of freedom that lead to peace, which supplied a lot of momentum for the passage of that bill, framing it as his brother's, in effect, dying wish. He was a prime mover behind the Americans with Disabilities Act, 1990. That was one of the things he was proudest of. The war on cancer, he was a prime soldier there. And in 1 year alone, 1971, he got funding for cancer research quadrupled. You know, he was a prime mover in the passage of COBRA, which let workers continue their health insurance for a time between jobs, the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, the Ryan White Act to help treat people with AIDS, establishment of community health centers, the SHIP legislation to provide health care for children, on and on and on. I mean, you can argue about his political philosophy. You can argue about his the way he comported himself at times in his private life for certain periods of his life. But you have to put him on the scale with the most consequential legislators in American history. I mean, there are those who would rank him with Daniel Webster and the great 19th century orators.
And it continues on our webpage where people always let it rip. Another one says, Kennedy strikes me as similar to John D. Rockefeller, Jr., feeling the weight of past mistakes, he worked doubly to do right. After the disastrous presidential bid against Carter, effectively helping Reagan win and setting us on the path to 30 years of Republican crimes, according to this listener, Kennedy became one of the great senators of American history. But someone else, Kamal from Jackson Heights, the Kennedy sense of entitlement. JFK's using the Secret Service to procure prostitutes for his pleasure in the White House. Caroline trying to steal the New York State senatorship, again, according to this listener, combined with their lack of substance, make their story a sad family saga, more appropriate for reality TV than to govern our nation. Someone else, Kennedy was as personally flawed as any of us, helped along in a sad way by great privilege. Someone else, before we all canonize Brother Ted, let us remember that he ran against Carter in 1980, guaranteeing the downward spiral called Reaganism had begun. So two of the more liberal posters there on the page, Don, referring to this primary campaign in 1980 against the sitting Democratic president, Jimmy Carter, which helped pave the way for Ronald Reagan to win and all that that has wrought. Why did Ted Kennedy challenge a sitting president from his own party?
Very good question. I mean, I think it was a combination of ego, it always is, a sense that he could do a better job, a sense that it was, in the eyes of his followers, if not necessarily Kennedy himself, his destiny. I mean, don't forget, from the day Bobby was killed in, you know, June of 68, there was relentless pressure and expectation that Ted Kennedy would, you know, be in the Oval Office one day. I remember there was a Doonesbury cartoon in the middle of the Carter term that made reference to the Carter presidency as being a presidency in escrow, you know, just sort of waiting there for Kennedy to come along. He was not a gracious loser. I mean, we all remember the 1980 tableau of Jimmy Carter literally chasing him around the stage of the Democratic National Convention, looking for the obligatory handshake of unity. I'm not sure if he ever got it, but it was a humiliating thing for Carter to experience. And your emailers are probably right that it did contribute to Carter's defeat in 1980. I mean, there were those, I believe Hamilton Jordan, or one of the former Carterites has said as much, that if they had not had to go through that bloody primary and if Teddy had been more wholehearted in his support, they might have Carter might have held on to the presidency in 1980.
Megan from City College writes, Mary Jo would have been 69 this summer. Could you imagine, she repeats, a Republican staying in office with his many, many personal failings? It would never happen. Steve in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to relate a story. You know, we paint politicians as politicians and never look at their humanity. And when I was in my freshman year of college, I broke my neck playing football. And Ted Kennedy had been in that plane crash a year before, and he took the time, based on just a note my mother's friend wrote to his office, to write me a personal letter about courage and about healing and about believing in myself. And it's still framed over my desk in my house, and I've never forgotten it. On the 40th anniversary, I wrote him again to thank him and relate the story. He wrote me back again.
Steve, thank you for that. And Scott in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Whoops, I think we're having some phone problems here. Let's see if I can get Scott. Scott, I think you're on the air. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am. I live in New York now, but I'm born and raised in Hyannis, Massachusetts, and I know a lot has been said about Senator Kennedy's personality, but he's done some amazing kindnesses for people, his friends and neighbors on the Cape, people who don't have a lot of influence and aren't big shots, but just, again, his friends and neighbors. And an example, my father faced a liver transplant a few years ago, and he knew the senator from around town and from business and everything. And after my father had his surgery, the senator was on the phone with him almost every other day for a couple of weeks just to check in with him, say hello, 5 minutes out of his day where he had probably 100 more important things to do. And it made an enormous impact on my father's recovery. And it was just a simple act of kindness from a very important, powerful man. And I think that speaks well to his humanity as much as anything else.
Scott, thank you very much. And Donna Coyne from the Boston Globe, co-author of Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. Before you go, I wonder which of his legislative achievements you think he would hold above the rest. You were mentioning some of them before, and I've got a list here, including health insurance for children of the working poor, Medicare prescription drugs, the Americans with Disabilities Act, Meals on Wheels for the elderly, abortion clinic access, family leave, creation of OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration for workers. Chuck on our comments page writes, in 2002, he voted against authorizing the Iraq War. Later, he called that opposition the best vote I've made in my 44 years in the United States Senate. What do you think he would have called the best vote yesterday morning?
You know, it's a very good question, Brian. I mean, I think, unfortunately, the thing he might have seen as his crowning achievement is the one he did not live to see, which is universal health care. I think he saw that as, in a way, an embodiment of all the other battles, the battles for more cancer funding and in a way, a kind of a civil rights battle, and certainly, you know, the battle he waged on behalf of people struggling at the margins for throughout his career. I think he saw healthcare as the thing that knit all those themes together. And that's the thing that he was not able to see through.
Donna Coyne, Boston Globe staff writer, co-author of Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. Thanks so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you.
And we'll talk more about Ted Kennedy again later in the program. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. First, coming up in just a minute, we'll hear from the New York State Commissioner for Juvenile Justice, Gladys Carrion, about the horrible revelation of abusive minors at New York Juvenile Detention Center. Stay with us.